We're doing in Yaakov, and we're nearing the end of Tractate Shabbat, Masechet Shabbat, and the Gemara continues. Tanya, we have a Braisa. This is a Tanaic quote that did not make it into the Mishnah. Hagilyonim, if you have blank pieces of parchment, you thought you'd use it to write a Sefer Torah, then you didn't. So that's called Gilayon, white parchment. Hagilyonim, v'sifrei tzedukim, the Sadducees would write Sifrei Torah, and they would write it, but it wasn't based on our tradition. The Sadducees denied our tradition. So the Braisa says, En mitzilin otam mipenei hadeleika. If there's a fire, don't take it out of the building on Shabbos. On Shabbos, we don't treat it as a holy work. You don't take it out of the building. So people ask sometimes, what am I supposed to do? There are missionaries that give people Bibles, Old Testament, New Testament. From our end, it has no holiness. So you'll say, but it has, sometimes it's written in Hebrew. Right, but holiness is imparted not with the text, but rather with the intent of the one who writes it. So if someone who denies the authenticity of the Torah, denies what we hold to be true, and he writes Hashem's name and he writes a Torah, so from our end it doesn't have holiness. So this Braisa says that the works of the Sadducees, if it were a Shabbos, and you had their Tanakh, they wrote a whole Chamisha Chumri Torah, Ten Commandments. They wrote a whole book of Torah, and there's a fire. Don't take it out on Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, what should you do on a weekday? Bachol on a weekday, Koderet Azkarot Shebahen V'Gonezan. You cut out every place that says Hashem's name, and you bury that. V'Ashal Sofan, and the rest of the Torah they write, you burn. That's what Rabbi Yossi says. Amar Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Tarfon said, Akapeach et banai, I swear by the life of my kids, Shim yavo liyadi, shani yisrof otan ve'et ha'azkarot shebahen, if I get in my hands a Torah scroll of a Sadducee, says Rabbi Tarfon, I'm going to burn it. I'm not waiting for a fire and discussing what you do. I'm ready to burn it. Ve'et ha'azkarot shebahen, including the places where they wrote Hashem's name. Shafilu adam odef acharav leogov nachash rash lehakishov nichnas lebet avodat kochavim umazalot venichnas lebatehen shel eilu. If a person is being chased, someone wants to murder him. If a person is being chased and a poisonous snake wants to bite him. Says Rabbi Tarfon, walk into a house of idol worship, but don't walk into the house of the Sadducees. Why? Shalalu makirin vekofrin, because the valalu en makirin vekofrin. When you have a pagan, so this is what he grew up believing. He doesn't know anything else exists. So when you go into his temple, you went into something where he innocently believes in that. But the Sadducees, they know what they're doing is a lie, and they still deny the tradition of the rabbis, and they go that route. That's much more dangerous. So Rabbi Tarfon says, we view a Sefer Torah that they wrote as something that was written with a deceitful intent. They don't accept the holiness of the Torah. They don't accept the tradition of the Torah. And they're doing it deceitfully. And so they're much more dangerous. And so Rabbi Tarfon says, I'm prepared to burn a Torah that they wrote. V'alehem ha-katuv omer, and about them, the verse says, Achar ha-delet v'amzuza samt zichronech. You retain your memory behind the door and the doorpost. In other words, it's not that you've forgotten me, says the Ribon Shel Olam. You just decided to disregard me. you're aware of my existence. We're going to learn that in a number of weeks in the Navi Yeshaya. Towards the end of the book of Yeshaya, the Navi speaks to the Jewish people and he describes their decision, some of their decision, to pursue paganistic ways. The Navi says, you didn't make a mistake. You knew I exist, and you decided to ignore that and put me behind the door. So says Rabbi Tarfon, is the way of the Sadducees. Now Rabbi Tarfon teaches us a concept which has been the source of much discussion in the last millennium. Throughout our history, there was a question how we view different movements that have gone against the tradition of the Jewish people. And it's a big challenge, because the concept that Rabbi Tarfon says, that later generations innocently go down a path, that's a concept which is quoted in the Rambam. Rambam writes that the Talmud's discussion of how to treat the Karaites, and in other places the Rambam says the Sadducees equal the Karaites, was only about those generations that were purposely going against tradition. Later generations that have no concept of tradition, so we view them as innocent children who were misled. We don't view them badly. So that's an important concept. However, the question is, this question sometimes comes up, there's a famous story that Rav Mordechai Leo was traveling and he needed a minyan. So they stopped outside a shul and the shul was locked. So they wanted to daven mincha. They started calling Jews from the street. They had 8 Jews. And then a car pulled up and out came 2 people. So they asked them, who are you guys? So one said, I'm the rabbi of the shul, and this is my assistant, my driver. So they said, really? What's the deal with this shul? They said, oh, it's a Reform temple. You guys can come in and pray by us. So Rabbi Elio said, no, we're happy to pray outside. So Rabbi Elio's helper asked him, okay, can we daven now? So he said, no, we're up to 9. So the rabbi said to Rabbi Elio, he said, I'm here with my helper, we make 10. So Rabbi Eliyahu said, no, you make 9. So he said, what do you mean? Either you count both of us or you count neither of us. So Rabbi Eliyahu is quoted as having said, no, your helper doesn't know any better. So he's a kosher Jew, he's being misled. You, I assume, know better. You can't count as one of the 10. We still need one more. So that's a concept that's a challenging concept. We don't like to judge other people. We would much rather assume that everyone means well. But we can't always ignore reality. And the question arises. I had a student once who wrote me, he's living in a city where there's no shul, only a Reform shul. Should he go there to daven? So that's a very difficult question, because technically we view it the way Rabbi Tarfon said. You're walking into a place that you really shouldn't walk into there. You're better off davening at home. But what happens if a guy doesn't, he never goes to shul? Will he remain Jewish? Meaning Rabbi Tarfon says, you're risking everything by going into there. Then the question becomes, and what are you risking by not going into there? How do we view? There were people who, throughout our history, this opinion of Rabbi Tarfon is accepted on the one hand, but the application is very difficult. The application is difficult for many levels, because we also we always view it as we're waiting for them to return. We're not interested in hating people. From our end, we're waiting for the person to rectify his error. Even in the time of the Haskalah movement, where the Maskilim would make fun of the rabbis and try to mislead their own children and disciples from what the rabbis were teaching, the rabbis tried to treat the Maskilim nicely. They tried. It's a challenge. We once had a guy who came here. He wasn't a student, but he attended classes. He liked the classes, okay? But he was a criminal. So I knew he was a criminal, so I was nice to him. But he's trying to do tshuva, he's trying to learn. And then he committed crimes against some students. And students found out, and it ended up in the police, and it was a long story. And one of the students came to me afterwards and said, I thought he was your friend. I said, what do you mean you thought he was my friend? He said, you treated him so nicely. I said, well, I'm supposed to treat everyone nicely. The fact that I treat someone nicely doesn't mean that you should trust him and that he isn't. I'm supposed to treat everyone nicely. But you understand that a student sees you treating someone nicely and warmly and you invite them for a cup of tea, and so that could mislead them. So that's a big challenge. When do you have to protest? And when do you say, let me treat him nicely? Because we do want people to do tshuva. I'm saying this application of what Rabbi Tarfon said is very challenging. You want to help the individual, but you run the risk of people being misled after that individual. That's the challenge. One of the challenges, yeah.
Isn't everything I totally understand about, you know, much better to daven at home than daven in an inappropriate place, but what is hard to understand is not counted for a minute. That's difficult.
Well, I'll tell you,
a born Jew is a Jew.
Right, but 10 people, the concept of a minyan is that you have 10 people sanctifying Hashem's name. When the Reform movement adopted 30, 40 years ago the position, and the conservative movement, that God is not involved in this world, and everything we're doing is cultural, and the Torah is not authentic.
How are you sanctifying the name?
So what's sanctification, right?
But that's taking the leap, which the Rav did, that the rabbi is necessarily learned enough, just because he's a rabbi in the Reform movement, that he's on this higher level. Maybe he should be, but today I would think you could make a case that many aren't.
Maybe. I'm just saying.
Once you say to somebody, we're not counting you as a minion, that's a big, big thing.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, as you said, you count the criminal, you count a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. But that's, one of our rules, even in terms of wine, I'm saying one of our rules is, we say that someone who doesn't observe Torah and mitzvot, so we don't drink wine that they handle. However, if there's someone that they respect, that in their presence they wouldn't desecrate Shabbos, maybe it's the chief rabbi of Israel, but there's someone that they respect, that they in their presence, so then we say that's okay. The question here is, there's someone they respect. and that's in terms of the wine. Here, you're dealing with the question, is there a sanctification of Hashem's name?
But the byproduct is you're certainly pushing someone further away. Here, you're welcome to daven in our shul, but we won't even count you for a minute. It's like, he said, we'll daven outside. Fair, great. But, you know, it's a tough call. I'd say, I'm not disputing it. I just say I was surprised.
But sometimes it's also a wake-up call.
Yeah, it could be.
Sometimes you have to stand up and say, I'm sorry, this is wrong. Where we can be friends, it can be nice, and you also have to know that this is wrong.
He knows that. But again, thinking something you're wrong, you're doing something, you know, and but you've lost the ability to count can be considered a part of the Kehila, to be even an opinion. That's a huge stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So actually, this is very suitable for me because in the city I grew up in Brazil, they only have a conservative shul. And how to deal with this? Because I know that the big, big majority of the community is not religious. But I know that the same people, the 11, 12 people that are every day, the same people in the minyan, even though most of them doesn't keep Shabbos completely or doesn't even keep kashrut, I know they are there to sanctify God's name too, because they actually believe in praying there.
So that's a question you have to discuss in private. I'm saying I was trying to show how difficult this statement of Rabbi Tarfon is. He's awakening us to a reality we would rather not face, but he's saying don't ignore the dangers. There were institutions that opened up to combine Torah and secular education in the United States, and there were rabbis who, based on this statement of Rabbi Tarfon, said go to a Christian college, because there you know you have nothing to do with them. But here they're going to adulterate what they're teaching you, and you'll walk away confused. It's much more challenging when you're dealing with someone who's from within and trying to confuse things than someone who, you know, he believes in something completely different than I do. So it's very foreign. It's a challenge. I'm not saying that the answer is one way or the other. I'm just saying the angle, the approach is something which we definitely take into account, what Rav Tarfon just taught us. Yes?
You say that they don't believe in God?
You could look up if you want. I'll send you a link.
I'm asking, they don't believe in Hashem?
I didn't say they don't believe in his existence. I said in his involvement and the Torah being from Shemayim.
So what is their reason for keeping or like having a separate Torah?
Cultural.
But what's the motivation? You don't say culture, the only motivation. That's the only...
So, if you ask them, they'll say one thing, and if you ask me, I'll say another thing. They'll tell you it's cultural, and I'll tell you that deep down inside, they also know and they also want to be connected. I'll tell you that there's something very good and pure deep down inside of every Jew, and that's why even if a Jew is denying certain things verbally, deep down inside, he doesn't want to let go. So he makes excuses for himself. So every person makes excuses in some areas, and some people make excuses on the whole pot, on much more. But at the end of the day, they don't want to let go. I believe it comes from a good place. I believe that because there's something in them that says, this is really who I am, I believe that they're trying. That's what I believe, but again, that's because I want to look at that. I believe, not only because I want to, I believe there's something intrinsically good and intrinsically Jewish about them as well.
Rabbi?
Yeah?
Are you saying the problem that the Torah is man written, not God written?
That's their declaration. If you want a link, I could send you to that, unfortunately.
That's all you know.
That once they made that declaration, until that declaration, there was a question. When people would convert in the conservative courts, so we treated it as a questionable conversion, because until the 70s, where they made that declaration, so many of the people who were practicing rabbis in the conservative movement, some grew up Orthodox, some were Orthodox, and that brought us to a situation where you didn't really know what the man believed, and even if he was, if he took the leniencies way beyond the realm of halacha, we still viewed conservative as something that was, that we didn't know what to do with their rabbis. Once they made that declaration, so then the conversion isn't a conversion, and their Sifrei Torah aren't Sifrei Torah. I'm saying they crossed the red line that made it such that from that point onward, this just isn't Judaism.
There's no spirituality at all.
I didn't say no spirituality. I'm just saying from a halachic perspective, someone who says that the Torah is not God-given, so then you can't respect their conversion. That's a basic tenet of Judaism. And if the one who's converting doesn't believe in it, so then now how could you even consider the one they've converted?
Before you said they don't believe that Hashem is involved in this world.
Right.
Another way of saying it, but you could say, since when? Maybe at Sinai they believe there was revelation.
But their declaration is not that way. Their declaration, that the official standing of the conservative movement is that it's all man-written.
Just deism-like, basically.
I don't know what deism is.
There was a creation, and then...
I don't know if they even go that far. I don't know if they go that far. I don't know. I don't know where they stand on that. I know. I read what their official declaration was. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. I'm saying you can't be considered a rabbi or a court or have any official standing. Once a person doesn't accept the most basic things of what Judaism is, so they can't convert anyone. I'm saying
they believe this across the board. Torah, the written Torah.
I'm talking about the written Torah. That was their declaration about the written Torah.
Not the fact that the rabbis don't have the authority.
No. Written Torah. You want? I'll send you a link. You could read it, unfortunately. Yes.
Why would they study the Talmud and Gemara then?
Again, why should I answer for them? You're asking good questions. I would view it from a positive light, but whatever. I'm not sure they would say what I'm saying.
Some deep inside that wants to connect.
I think so.
The people at Hebrew University will study it from an intellectual pursuit. It's part of our cultural tradition.
Even them, I think that's what they tell themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, Yitzhak.
Okay, I have a question about this.
It happened in the conservative years to go. There is a huge community that a lot of very rich people give a lot of money, so they have a very beautiful shul and buildings there. It happened that last year, a community, another group of Jews from Brazil that are Orthodox like Meisharim here, and for Brazil that's like ultra-Orthodox, and they refused to pray in the shul. They prayed outside.
Right.
So the thing is that the entire community, all the Jews of the community in my city, they started saying very bad things about Orthodoxy and towards and of Halakha and certain aspects of Judaism because of this action of them. So can this be considered Chilul Hashem or something?
No. When we stand for what's right,
I can say that like 200 Jews at least got maybe a... It will be harder for them to go to be more respectful of Jewish law because of these actions than if...
But that's not the definition of Chilul Hashem.
But like the thing is they... By acting like this and other things they said, like...
I don't know the details, but in general, the fact that I don't drive on Shabbos, even if someone says, because you don't drive on Shabbos, I'm going to have nothing to do with Orthodoxy, I'm sorry, I don't drive on Shabbos. I'm not coming to hurt anyone, I'm not coming to offend anyone, but just like I don't drive on Shabbos, I won't go into that shul, and I don't consider it a shul. There's a system I live by. They want to live by their system, I'm entitled to live by my system. And if they choose to take offense to the point where they say, if your system doesn't recognize us, then we're all upset at you. Well, I'm very sorry. That's still the system. It doesn't change the system. And it's not called that I'm desecrating Hashem's name. Now, I do try to avoid a confrontation. I definitely try. I'm not interested in saying that to their face. I'm not interested in telling them, hey, I don't respect or value where the place you pray in. There's no point in saying that. But very often they corner us. And very often we're willing to invite them to the house and we're willing to do a lot of things. And then they bring a homemade cake when you told them, don't bring anything homemade. And then they bring it and they say, you won't eat from me? So what am I supposed to say? Do you know dietary laws? Do you really have separate meat and dairy dishes? When you go out, do you allow yourself to buy at Burger King and then you bring the leftovers home? I keep a kosher kitchen. Right, but... A, do you know what it means, a kosher kitchen? And B, I had students, not here, in other places I taught, where they told me, at home we keep kosher, but when we go out, come on, don't tell me not to go to Burger King, right? So then what? You don't bring the leftovers home? I'm supposed to treat that as a kosher kitchen? Forget the fact that, how could I trust them? They don't eat kosher. I'm saying, but even if, let's say, I did trust them, and they don't bring the leftovers home, and they don't heat that up in that oven in the microwave, so then they corner me. And they come to my house and they bring their whatever they made. And now, wait, you don't trust my kosher kitchen? Look, if you're going to ask me, then the answer is no, I don't. I'm sorry. I don't want to tell you that. I'm going to try to avoid it. So sometimes a guest will bring a cake, and a homemade cake, and I'll leave it on the side. And then they'll leave, and then maybe they'll say, oh, what happened to that? Oh, we forgot. We'll have to eat at a different meal. Or we try to get around defending them. But if they're going to corner me at the very end... So then sometimes it'll reach a point where no. So when I could say I'm not feeling so great, I have a stomach ache, when I can get out of it without hurting their feelings, I will. But that doesn't mean that when push will come to shove, if they corner me, they won't get the answer they don't want to hear. And if they consider that Chilul Hashem, I'm sorry, it isn't. Tov, so we're up to Rabbi Yishmael.